Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. A couple of days after our first attempt at this week's podcast, tonight I'm joined by Graham Barnstable and Peter Elder. We'll go over the victory over Kilmarnock, look ahead to Saturday's Scottish Premiership fixture against Hibs. We'll have a wee bit of chat on the transfer window and the changing of the landscape down south in regards to the transfer window. And we'll see what else takes our fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having us.
Well, Graham, I'll start with yourself. Saturday's victory over Kilmarnock, meaning it's now three wins in the bounce. Very satisfying run of form that we're on currently. Home form looking very strong as well. Something that we have struggled to turn Fir Park into a fortress in recent times, but it's looking like we might be able to do that. And Saturday, despite not being a great first half, it was a very professional second half performance and a very deserved victory.
No, I agree with that 100%. I think at half time we dominated possession for much of the first half, but Kelly probably the best two chances, and Carson saved from Brophy, and then went out of the bar from Gordon Greer. But as Steve Robinson seems to be able to do, he changed things at half time, both a substitution with Hamill replacing Dunn and shuffling things about a wee bit, and then bringing a bigger man on just changes things completely, and it could be whatever we wanted it to be. I think in the second half, you watch the highlights back, you don't realise that Louis Moult could probably have scored a bit four on his own in the second half before the penalty. So I was never really that concerned in the second half we're going to lose the game, although the longer they went 1-0, you think there could be an Irwin moment, there could be a Thomas moment here coming back to bite us in the proverbial. But oh, another professional performance on top of the two against Hearts and Ross County in the previous two home games.
Peter, after starting the season with two defeats, I'm not saying alarm bells begin to ring, because it was a difficult fixture against Rangers, a difficult trip to McDermott Park, but it's definitely not ideal not to have taken any points from your first two games. It's been a very strong comeback, hasn't it? And to now be able to put a run together of three consecutive victories, it's testimony to Stephen Robinson and his players.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there was, as tends to be, a lot of, I think Jay likes to use the phrase, pant wetting, when you lose your first couple of league games. But I mean, you look at them in isolation. I mean, Rangers, apart from the first 15 minutes, we were very, very much in the game and had three outstanding chances to score, and chances we probably should have taken, and probably should at least have had a point out of that, and that's not even discussing the penalty incidents. Then St Johnstone was just an aberration from the refereeing perspective, and the fact that I think that their first three shots at goal all ended up in goals, and you know, despite the fact that we, from the, you know, the point of being 2-0 to the point of the first red card, we were by far, you know, I felt the better team that day. But yeah, there's in previous seasons we could have felt sorry for ourselves and we lost two games and supporters got a turn, but certainly, I think the turning point was half time against Ross County. And this is the phrase I was using on Saturday regarding Stevie Robinson is he's proactive rather than reactive. He sees something that's wrong, he's not afraid to change it, he's not going to wait until it's potentially too late. That was certainly the case against County, and it was the case on Saturday as well. Obviously, Charles Dunn was a little bit, shall we say, unwell. A few people witnessed that. I'm glad I didn't close up myself. But obviously, bringing on Biggie as well, and he seemed to kick on, and with Alan Campbell playing an absolutely outstanding role in midfield as well, we dominated, as Graham said, most of the second half, and 2-0 was the very, very least we deserved. So, 3 in the bounce at home, we're turning Fir Park into a fortress, and now we've got to try and go to Easter Road on Saturday and keep the positivity going.
Graham, I'm trying not to repeat too much of what was already said in Sunday evening, but for me, I thought Alan Campbell was absolutely superb on Saturday. He's come into the team and he's shown a good bit of resilience as well, because he wasn't even in the 18 in some of these Betfred League Cup games. Lesser characters would have maybe let their head drop and maybe find themselves on the periphery due to a lack of confidence, but he's been given an opportunity in the last couple of weeks and he's grasped it with both hands, very much deserving of maintaining his starting place in the team. And now he looks like he's going to be very hard to displace at the centre of the park.
I agree with you, Andy. I think even his resilience was back to the Hugman A game against Hamilton, where I thought he was outstanding in that game. He seemed to fall out of the picture again towards the tail end of last season. And he plugged away in the 20s, and every time I saw him play the 20s last season, he put in excellent performances and was constantly chapping at the manager's door. And you're right, even at the start of this season, I thought he played well in some of the cases he did go in the Betfred Cup. But the last three games, he's helped change the games, he's helped shape the games. And on Saturday, I think I said on Sunday as well, I seem to remember him, even in the 20s, as a solid kind of breaking down Jamie Dolan type, he'll break the play down, then pass it on. But on Saturday, he was almost a Phil O'Donnell, where he was linking back and front, getting box to box. And I wasn't aware of him being that type of player before either. And that's heartening to see as well, that he's got that energy to do all of that. And it was good to hear he's on the fringes of the Scotland Under 21 squad. No, assuming he was in standby for the last squad. But he must be making Scott Gemmell sit up and notice and think this boy deserves a crack.
Peter, what is really encouraging as well, you look at the bench on Saturday, and I think maybe over the previous couple of seasons, you sometimes turn to the Motherwell bench and think there's not a great deal of depth there, there's not a great deal of options. All seven of the guys that were on the bench on Saturday could have feasibly come on and done a job. You thought there's seven genuine options on the bench rather than space fillers, for want of a better expression.
They could all have possibly started, never mind come on as a sub and done a job. If any of the seven had started, you probably wouldn't have complained either, would you?
No, absolutely not. They were. I think that's, and Stephen Robinson, and rightfully so, is getting praised for changing things up. But to be fair, to the previous managers, I suppose they've not had these options available to them.
Well, that to an extent is true. I think even more impressive when you mentioned the bench on Saturday. Look at the fact that Elliot Freer was injured and unable to be considered. Graham will notice as well on Saturday, obviously from my extra lofty position covering the stadium announcer on Saturday, just after 2 o'clock, sitting up the back of the stand, you had Ross McLean, who wasn't in the 18, Ellis Plummer, who's on loan, I think, for the season, he wasn't in the 18. You know, so you have guys where, even a few weeks ago, you thought, oh, these guys are in the squad and they're going to be involved every week. You know, the new boy Demantis Petrovicius, I'm glad I got that right, not in the 18, you know.
That was a brave move, that was.
It was, but I was confident I had it practice in case he was in the team on Saturday. you know, there's three and four players who you think would be selected and they weren't in the 18. So I think even, you know, the bench, absolutely, but the fact that, you know, players who are not actually either available through injury or not able to be selected because of the strength and depth that Stephen Robinson has created, then that speaks volumes for the job the manager's done as well. Obviously, the big problem he's going to have now is obviously keeping everybody happy and giving them enough game time. It was good to see the likes of Alex Fisher, who scored a couple for the 20s tonight, and Craig Tanner going to run out Ross McLean, the previously mentioned Petrovicius as well, and Plummer getting some game time. Hopefully they're happy enough doing that at the moment, but it shows that, you know, there's no guarantee if you're coming on loan from Man City that you're going to get your game at Motherwell. And if these guys are with the right attitude and they're prepared to fight for their place, then that's all going to be good for, you know, the rest of the season moving forward.
Yeah, I think Ellis has actually, he signed up for the season. I'm pretty sure that he was released by Manchester City. I think, as it stands, Peter Hartley is our only loan player at the moment. Graham, that kind of moves us on quite nicely to the returning Liam Grimshaw and a debut for Peter Hartley on Saturday. I thought Hartley was very accomplished. We didn't miss the void left by Ben Hennigan, who was in very impressive form at the start of the season. Then Liam Grimshaw came on and chased everything down. Looked like he had bundles of energy, desperate to impress. Positive signs again from both guys.
Yeah, Peter Hartley, I think you can almost argue, you've just mentioned it, Andy, he's a bit of an upgrade on Hennigan. Our guy's played over 300 games in English football, scored a few goals as well. I remember saying to Graham McGarry in commentary on Saturday, his first two touches was first one was a powerful header away and a good clearance. His second was a cute header back to Trevor Carson. And that seemed to settle him a bit. He then started to encourage Kipri and Dunn on either side of him, talking him through the game. I never really put a foot wrong, and it's hard to tell whether Lee Irwin had a poor game because he isn't very good or because Hartley played him out of the game. And I would probably go with the latter, because I think Hartley had him in his pocket. It's just a shame he tired with 10 minutes to go, which put us under a wee bit of pressure when Callum McHugh to move back. But Liam Grimshaw, I was quite surprised we brought him back, given the number of players we have in midfield. I liked him when he was here the first time. I felt sorry for him when he got taken back by Man United and sold on to Preston, because I think if he'd stayed at Fir Park the previous time, his development would have been a lot quicker. But we know what he can do. You mentioned it yourself. He gives us bundles of energy in midfield, aggression as well, that'll help the midfield when others are maybe injured, and can come in and give us that grip when we need it, maybe to grind out an ugly win that we're trying to do maybe a wee bit on Saturday as well. So the two of them certainly give even more depth to the squad that we're talking about. And again, it's credit to Steve Robinson and the recruitment team and Martin Foyle for going finding these guys and bringing them back here.
Yeah, as Graham said there, Peter, I was quite surprised at Liam Grimshaw returning as well. I did feel that it was maybe a wee bit of overkill in the centre of the park, but you actually look at the fact that he can play right back. If there was a situation where there was an injury to Richard Tate, as there was last season, Liam can comfortably go in and cover there. He's a versatile player, and that's obviously a huge asset. I want to actually pay tribute to Richard Tate as well, who is a guy that I've maybe been a bit down in his defensive qualities, but that was a sensational performance on Saturday. Looks so good going forward, such a threat. Played a big part in both goals. Yeah, impressive from Richard Tate as well.
Well, absolutely, and bear in mind the fact that obviously Tate is now, he can cover adequately, you know, his left wing back, even though it's not his natural side. I think it makes his performance all the better. And obviously the fact that Jack McMillan's out on loan, Grimmie can cover, as you say, the right-hand side as well. So it's good to have players like that who are adaptable. Well, obviously it means if Cads is playing right wing back, or if we play Grimmie, Cads could play further forward and a more attacking role. We've got different options, and if Robbo wanted to change the setup from 3-5-2 to maybe 4-3-3, for example, we've got the players, we can do that without upsetting things too much. So yeah, I mean, it was good. It would be a bit of a surprise. It wasn't really mentioned until deadline day itself about potentially Grimmie coming back, but he's a cracking guy. He's got an infectious personality, so it's obviously that'll kind of, he's a bubbly type of guy, although as Graham probably knows, if he's spoken to him in any official capacity, he's not the easiest guy to understand, you know, that kind of thick Burnley accent that he possesses. Right. But
say off the cobbles of Coronation Street.
Well, that's what I said to him. He's a cross between Ken Barlow and Zach Dingle, because the Burnley's right on the kind of Yorkshire-Lancashire border, though. He doesn't like the Yorkshire reference, but It's quite a thick accent that he's got, but it's certainly good to have him back. And as you rightly say, it's adding to the depth and the quality of the squad. I think we've not just brought in numbers; we've certainly improved the quality markedly.
And on Liam Grimshaw, I think we get into his blood when he was up the last time, if you remember. I think he joined the Welsh Society when he was here the first time.
Him and his dad, actually, that's absolutely right.
And they kept coming back up. His parents kept coming back up after they left because they enjoyed the company so much and enjoyed coming to Firth Park so much. So we obviously made an impression the first time and got in his bloodstream, and that's why he was quite keen to come back as well.
I think so, yeah. If it wasn't for the fact he supported Wigan Warriors rugby, he'd be absolutely fine, you know what I mean? everyone's got a drawback.
It does add a very successful transfer window. We had Alan Burrows on last week for what was a really well-received podcast as well. I think it's very hard not to listen to Alan speak about what's going on at Motherwell just now and not be hugely encouraged by what he's saying. And it's been backed up by what was a very impressive transfer window, both in acquiring the services of a number of good players and also retaining the likes of Louis Moll and Chris Cadden, which will be absolutely vital to their success over the course of the season.
Transfer window has been an upgrade and we were there last season, Andy. I'm the kind of sad startle that does a spreadsheet every summer of the previous squad. I move out the players that went out and fill in the ones that came in. And you look at the ones that have come in compared to what went out at the end of last season, I think there's absolutely no doubt the squad is stronger than it was this time last year. No disrespect. I like Craig Clay when he's there. Lee Lucas, Zach Jules have all gone. Jacob Blythe gone and replaced by players of far better quality than those I've just mentioned.
I would agree with that, actually, Graham. Yeah, as much as, you know, these guys, obviously Big Blythe didn't play very much, but I mean, you know, their intentions were good. They tried their best, and I'll you know, I've got respect for any player that pulls on the Motherwell jersey and tries their best, irrespective of if they make daft mistakes or whatever. They try their best. That's fair enough to me. But in terms of quality, I absolutely agree. And I think not just the players that we have signed, but I think the biggest marker that Motherwell laid down in the transfer window, and huge credit goes to Alan and all the guys at the club, Jim McMahon, the chairman, everybody, is that we did not bend over and just accept bids of a lesser value for Louis Moll, Chris Cadden, which 3-4 years ago I think the club probably would have done. And it's heartening to see that. I think that was the biggest plus for certainly for me, not just the additions, but the fact that we didn't buckle under pressure, because there are times where the press were carrying stories with, you know, Aberdeen then Rangers in for Moulton and Hearts looking at Cads and, you know, and almost trying to sell our players through the papers. But the fact that the club stood firm, and we've been rewarded, you know, a good deal for Heno, we're selling on fee, the same last year for Marvin, and now we've reaped the benefit a year later with more than doubling our money. Everything's pointing in the right direction, and I've got to tip my hat to the board and everyone in management positions at the club for you know, improving things beyond recognition.
Yeah, and I think that ties in with the good feeling about the place. Graham discussed this before, and it maybe felt like there was, I don't want to say a cloud over the place, but it just didn't seem to be, it didn't feel very positive going along to Firth Park. It was perhaps more of a sense of duty, I think, as you described it last week, rather than actually any sort of buzz or enthusiasm for going to see the football. That's changed this season, and I know we're very early on in the season, but not getting ahead of ourselves and starting to look at out the passports or anything like that, but there is definitely a good feeling, and that was again emphasised with the players to a man signing up for the Welsh Society as well. Something I believe the players should be doing, to be perfectly honest. It's a fan-owned club. The supporters are getting behind this and trying their best to ensure that the Welsh Society are successful in taking over the club, which they have done, and now kind of managing it successfully. So the players and the staff at Motherwell have to get on board with this, and it's good to see that that's what's happened.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the buzz about the place has come with both on and off the park. And I think the two of them sometimes have to collide. I know when I was involved with the Welsh Society and on the club board, it did seem a bit doom and gloom all the time. We were always talking about we're short of money. We had to sell Jamie Murphy for buttons, for example, just to see us through to the end of that season. Things like that. And it always seemed to be negative, but we seem to have turned that round a bit. Like Peter was saying about not accepting the bids for Moulton, Cadden. That's in a degree of positivity. The Welsh Society buying over the club seems to have stand a bit of momentum with Les doing the double your money thing as well. And now the players joining, it just all seems to be coming together at the one time. I think there's also a lot of good PR work being done. I think the Steelman thing, the new mascot was well handled and well introduced.
Yeah.
I think it's a whole combination of good people there. Ryan Murren doing a lot of good work. Susie Reid doing a lot of good work. The media box doing a lot of good work as well. And it just seems to be all clicking off the field at the same time as we'll put a decent side on the park, hopefully, for the rest of the season.
I want to just agree with Graham there. I mean, obviously, I'm maybe bound to say it because I'm a part-time employee. But, you know, a lot of people have been given a lot of stick over, you know, the last few months to guys like Ryan Murren, for example, say, what's he doing, you know. And I think people are now seeing over the past couple of months the fruits of his labour. The Maiden Motherwell campaign for the season tickets, I think, was magnificently done. As Graham rightly says, the Steelman and Raven Steel new mascots have been well received. Things like there seems to be a family on the bench watching the warm up, you know, before the game. Maybe a kid that's had a birthday or have not been well. Tiny wee things that don't bring in any money just now, but it's building up the positivity and it's getting fans for life. And Ryan's done a really, really good job. I mean, he's, you know, fan engagement officer, and there's absolutely no doubt that, you know, he has engaged with the fans, and the fans have re-engaged with the club on a lot of different levels. You know, going along to events, and the open day was a great success. And obviously, from my own selfishly hospitality, there's been a refurb in the centenary. There's more people coming in, more sponsors. Doozy and Bernadette have done a cracking job. I've had lots of positive comments from guests saying how the food's improved, how the experience has improved. They're very professional, and this is all good. And that's through people's hard work that has maybe gone a wee bit unnoticed, but it really should be shouted from the rooftops now.
You can also see it in the stands, Peter, as well.
Yeah.
There's been 4,000 or over 4,000 Motherwell fans. It doesn't sound a huge amount.
Yeah.
I was concerned over the last couple of seasons it was drifting down towards 3-4, 3-2 Motherwell fans at games. Now, that's an increase of almost 25% on what I've just mentioned. So the Maiden Motherwell campaign's helped that.
Yep.
So has the performance on the pitch, but that seems to be helping. It just seems to be, as I've said already, that collision of good work off the pitch and some good work on the pitch all coming together at the same time.
Absolutely right. And it's obviously one perhaps needs the other. I mean, if the performances aren't as good, if they hadn't started the season as well, perhaps these things wouldn't be noticed. Perhaps there wouldn't be as many people coming back into the club despite the campaign. But I think obviously Steve Robinson is the right character, and not just in the dugout on the training field, but within the club as well. You know, he's such a drive, such an ambition, and he's such a positive guy. And I think it's rubbing off on everyone throughout the club. Everyone's doing their own individual job very well, and it's all clicking together. It's Motherwell fans of our generation, Graham. We now start to think, right, it's all going so well. What's going to go wrong now? Because that's normally what happens, isn't it? Hopefully, it's not. But we always seem to wait for something to go wrong when we're talking so positively.
You always talk about the roller coaster, Peter. I'm never quite sure whether on the way up just now or on the way down, but you always expect it to come off the rails somewhere along the line.
You know, Sam, I think even, you know, if, you know, over the night, I'm not going to make any predictions or say, you know, kind of start to look doom and gloom, but I don't think if there was the odd defeat here and there, people would really be that worried to say, you know, we've still got a good team, you're not going to win every week. If you still see the same type of performances and the same type of effort, then I think people will say, well, you know, we're going to lose the odd game. There's no big problem it's not going to start a wave of negativity. And I think obviously if people just kind of hold on to that and don't get too down or too critical of people, if certain games don't go our way, that we, you know, as long as we remember how the rest of the positivity that's been around the club, and that we're in a better position than we were last season, you know, we're going to lose games, but it's, I think the general trend at Motherwell is upwards, and hopefully nothing will be derailed and people just, you know, don't overreact to defeats.
There's certainly a camaraderie amongst the squad as well. I just wanted to have a wee look at the Welsh society just for a couple of minutes longer. Graham, you've obviously experienced it firsthand from being on the board previously. There's been a real lack of positive PR out of the society in the initial stages. I know there was teething problems, there's various admin issues. The last 5 or 6 months, I've seen it slowly build up, and these positive news stories are gradually getting out there. I think there's an obvious interest now that the club are fan-owned. The fans have to get on board for it to be a success. They need to get on board for the football club to be run in a sensible fashion. You look at even the fact that we were able to maintain the services of Louis Moult and Chris Cadden, that suggests to me that we are in a pretty nice situation financially. It must be good to now look at the Welsh society and see that there's glimmers of light there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I had a frustrating, well, I don't know how long I was a chairman for, probably about 3 years, trying to generate that positive PR. But you're right, we had a lot of problems trying to define the kind of role and the constitution of it, despite it being already created. We had a lot of issues with the club back then, and it was just a constant battle behind the scenes. But now the Welsh Society is the behind the scenes, which makes life a bit easier for them as well. And they have somebody full-time working at the club who seems to have a very good knack with the newsletters and getting the right positive stories out there. I'm sure Les Hutchinson's helping that as well, with driving some of the initiatives that are coming about, particularly his own Double Your Money one that's coming along, which I think has helped. I think the big thing for me, Andy, that broke the kind of mould, which is we tried to get it in when I was there, was a monthly subscription. I think a lot of people are always put off by the £300, £500 or £1,000, whatever it was back in the day. Now you can subscribe from, I think, a fiver a month, and most of us can afford that. And I think that has helped see people realise that they can take a stake. And I think the club, as you say, putting a stake in the ground and saying we're not selling our best players because you helped us do that, has spurred a lot of people on to say, well, if I give my fiver a month, that may mean we can keep them again or offer Louis Moult a new contract. So, yeah, you're right. Those positive PR stories have helped build the Welsh society as a credible force, if you like. And it's led to some more positive PR for the club, I think, as well.
Saturday sees us take on perhaps our biggest test in the last month or so, as we travel to Easter Road to take on a Hibs side that, despite the fact they have had a lot of praise for their performances and maybe even to a certain degree their results, they've not won since the defeated Rangers in the second game of the season. It's certainly, Peter, going to be a very tough test, and it will maybe be a good marker as to where we are. I know that we've won the last three in the bounce, but I suppose if you assessed each individual side that we've beaten, the teams we've come up against haven't been in the best of forums. They will possibly not have the 16,000-17,000 home supporters to contend with as well. It will be a different atmosphere on Saturday for the players to face. A good test of their character, but one we've shown no signs that we can't take on and come out with something positive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously it's our first away game, since St Johnston in the league, certainly. Although in terms of away games, we did have a very tough midweek one in the League Cup against Ross County, which we came through. But Hibs, I think the biggest surprise with Hibs this season was after beating Rangers and everyone talking them up as they went, get their backsides handed to them against Accies at home, and that kind of derailed them. Obviously, there were a couple of draws on the road at Dundee and St Johnston, and I think they've obviously shown flashes in that, but Hibs are going to be one of these sides this season where they could actually, they could be absolutely magnificent or they could be absolutely rubbish. So it's difficult to know what Hibs are going to be, but as you say, there's going to be a big crowd there. I think we'll take a decent following through as well. We're in good form, and hopefully that'll get a few people kind of out of their armchairs and over to Easter Road to support the team on Saturday. But it should be hopefully a reasonably entertaining game. Hibs have got a lot of players. Hibs seem to be a really good side going forward. They've got a lot of good attacking threats from midfield, like John McGinn's, you know, come on in leaps and bounds the last few years. They've got good players, you know, up front. Obviously, Stokes always seems to score goals when he's wearing the Hibs jersey. But obviously, I think we have equally as many or possibly more threats ourselves. Obviously, I'm biased, but I don't see that Hibs being hugely better than us. It's going to be very much one of these games where Hibs might be the slight favourites to the bookies and whatnot, but I don't think it's going to be an obvious home win on Saturday. I think it's one of these games that's going to be like on the day, whoever performs slightly better will probably pick up the result, or possibly the smart money might be on a score draw at the weekend. But I think we'll definitely go there with confidence. I'm assuming we seem to be, Steve Robinson seems to have the idea that, you know, well, we'll play how we want to play. We'll not, sometimes previous managers have been too intent on, you know, what are the opposition doing, right? We'll change everything that we do to try and nullify what they do, and try to take the game to them and cause them problems with what we do. But I think we'll have got a fairly reasonable opportunity of picking up something on Saturday.
Graham, it was expected that the Hibs would come back up and be at least a team that would challenge for the top six. There's been very few signs that isn't going to be the case in the early exchanges of the season. I think I would have to go with my point in since the trip to McDermott Park. This is possibly the fiercest test we'll have faced in the league, certainly. But it was something that Alan Burrows said in the podcast last week with going into the Hearts game, and he said it was the first time in a couple of years we were coming up against a team like Hearts, and I really believed we could win. There was not that just kind of every week he's going in expecting to lose, but he was very confident we were going to win, and I think that's just another example of the shift in mindset at the club so far this season.
No, I think you're right. I actually went to the game against Kilmarnock on Saturday expecting to win, and anybody who knows me would find that extremely strange, because normally if I'm asked, I'll say, well, I'm never confident, but for some reason I was. I think because of the way we disposed of Hearts one night earlier, that gave me some hope that we could beat the teams round about, and all the teams that would be expected to be round about, is like Killie, Ross County, Dundee, the Akies, Thistle. I think we'll do well against them this year, and I think this is a good test of us on Saturday, for all the reasons you've already mentioned. Between the two of you, the big away crowd, the big home crowd of 16,000, if things go poorly for us at any stage of the game, we don't have that home support behind us. I think it's going to be a test for our back three with Stokes and Murray up against us. I think that's probably the first time we've played a kind of genuine two like that up against the back three, so that'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I'm travelling with some probably confidence rather than hope. No, I used to always travel with hope rather than anything else, but I'm travelling with a degree of confidence that we can take something from the game. It might be, as Peter said, it might be a score draw, and if we come back with a score draw, I'd probably be, delighted is maybe the wrong word, but I'd certainly be pleased with that and satisfied with it. If we won, I'd be absolutely ecstatic, but I think we can go with some degree of confidence and nothing to fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about the transfer window. As I mentioned in the opening to the podcast, the English Premier League clubs have agreed to close the window 2 days before their season starts next season. A suggestion that was made by Keith Lasley in this podcast maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, something we've discussed in quite a lot of detail, the structure of the transfer window. Obviously there is that degree of excitement. There was a few deals done by ourselves in the final day. I tend to think it's a bit of a circus, to be perfectly honest. I watch on and think that it's just overhyped. I really believe that clubs actually hold back in announcing transfers, just to kind of create that wee bit of buzz and excitement almost unnecessarily. Last season we lost Marvin Johnson the final day. We weren't able to replace him. You just kind of think that in these sort of circumstances, that could have, well, it could have really been a season defining moment, Marvin Johnson leaving, because for about 4 or 5 months after it, we had nothing in terms of width. We were in very poor form right up until pretty much the arse end of the season last season. So it was a significant loss and one that the club couldn't react to. I think this might be the way to go.
I agree with you, actually, Andy. I mean, I had a lot of sympathy last year for Ryan Bowman, because people seen him as a direct replacement for Marvin. Especially, you know, Marvin left, Ryan came in wearing the same jersey, number 11, and thought, oh, he's a winger, he's going to be fast. And he wasn't. And the difficulty Bowie had was he had a kind of, whatever they call it now, the conference in England, at that level of pre-season, where he didn't have a Scottish Premier League pre-season. So he struggled last season because of that. But you've seen him this season, the pre-season with us, at our level, his pre-season matches, he was in good form, scoring lots of goals. And he started this season really well. The last two or three games, I think he's been exceptional. So that's where it was a little bit unfair to him. And you're right, Andy, it did derail us markedly. I like the idea of the window finishing early. I mean, I think there's still obviously going to be a last day. It's just going to be a little bit earlier than the 31st of August. And as exciting as it is, and kind of, it is good viewing at times, as you say, are very much a kind of Sky Sports manufactured thing. And it does seem to be a bit kind of, as you say, overhyped, and as you say, just a manufactured excitement. But I think having the transfer window earlier would be an excellent idea, because I think a lot of teams, for some bizarre reason, you know, English teams were 3 games into the Premier League season. We were 4 games into the season. Then you're talking about finalising your squad. It always used to frustrate me. Some years were saying, oh, we don't worry, we don't need to worry about signing players. We've got until the end of August. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. Our season starts in the middle of July when we kick off the Betfred Cup. That's our first game. So you're talking about, well, we don't need to sign players. But then you've signed somebody like, you know, right at the end of August. We've already had 9 competitive games. You know, and it's like, I know obviously we've done a lot more business, but some clubs you might think, well, why have we not signed players early? Why do we know? We know we're maybe out the Betfred Cup now. We've maybe lost 2 or 3 games in the league. Why didn't we sign these players to be stronger when the season actually started? So I think doing that will force clubs to not hold off for the big marquee signing and get lots of publicity at the end of August. Have your squad ready for the very start of the season. And hopefully, especially when you look at clubs competing in Europe, then they'll be ready earlier, and hopefully, you know, kick on earlier as well.
I think that was a good thing about what we did this year in the transfer window. If you think, we must have had 7, 8, or 8 players in before pre-season started. Right. And then they went to Dublin, I think it was, for a week.
Yeah.
I got them all bonded. And you mentioned a bit earlier, Andy, that the squad was together. And I think that helped. I think going away and having those guys in early, albeit we've brought 2 in the last day, and we're still the Lithuanian boy whose name you can pronounce, Pierre, to come in. But I think we did the right this year, got players in early, got them into pre-season, got them bonded before the season started.
Yep.
I think you're right, Pierre, to wait to the last day is just, well, look at, I don't know if you've watched that wee Sheffield United video that they put on social media.
Five players
on the last day.
Yeah,
the agents started playing funny games and only get 2 of their targets in.
Yeah,
because they were held to the ransom.
Yeah,
so I think getting it done early was perfect for us this year. Getting it done before the start of the season would be even better. We talked about that the other night. I just think England are going out a bit of a limb here. They could get caught out. You know, they think they've got their squads ready for the start of the season. Then the Spanish come in or the French come in and start maybe taking some of their players away before the rest of Europe closes their transfer window. So there's maybe a bit of a strange thing going to go on next year.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Alan say that we did have Elliot Freer lined up in the instance that Marvin Johnson would leave. last August, but the issue was Forest Green Rovers didn't have a replacement for Elliot Freer. So I think it would maybe encourage teams to get their business done and avoid this situation where you're starting to go for your fourth and fifth target, which I think quite often happens in the transfer window as well. There's teams missing out in first, second and third. And by deadline day, they could easily be scrambling about for their eighth or ninth choice player just to kind of get involved in the nonsense that it's become, to be perfectly honest. It becomes a bit of a desperation game, and perhaps it is actually reducing the quality of the players that some teams are getting in. I would completely agree with you that I think doing your business early is beneficial, and being able to actually scan about and look at a variety of options. Stephen Robinson got to work as soon as we had beaten Kilmarnock last season to stay up. So I think
the fair thing is obviously done the work helps. I think they'd done the work before that, Andy. I think they knew either way, if we stayed up, they had their targets in mind. I think Martin Foyle, the head of recruitment, has done all that work. And I think they probably had alternatives if the worst came to the worst. We knew we were going for there as well. So I think there's a lot of work goes on. I think a lot of it I don't realise, like what Martin Foyle's doing, constantly down in England and going and watching games every week at youth level and a reserve level down there. And he spotted all of these guys probably way back February, March, and had them lined up, ready to go before the Commander game, before that Elliot Freer's goal sealed our fate last season. So the work started even earlier. Now, I guess what we see as fans generally is as soon as the Commander game was finished, it looked as if that's when the work started. But it had been going on for months to make sure we were ready to do all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, we'll wrap up the podcast. Graham actually got a wealth of compliments for his excellent work on the MFC TV commentary on Sunday. I'm tempted not to give them again because it seems a bit overkill, but again, we've talked about in previous podcasts, and I keep on going back to talk about previous podcasts tonight for some reason, but the media output at Motherwell, I would say, is second to none just now. Some excellent content from Lewis Irons and his team of contributors which isn't vast, it must be said, but certainly the quality coming out of the guys is very, very good. Your enthusiasm on the commentary, Graham, is excellent as well, and it's always good to watch after a victory to see the GoPro highlights dubbed over with your commentary. So, yeah, it must be a nice feeling to keep in many of the exiles and those that aren't able to get along to the games, keep them in touch with the goings on at Fir Park on a match day.
Yeah, it is. And in the early days, we didn't quite realise that's what was happening, but in recent times, starting to get messages either during games or after games from people all over the place in Bahrain and Australia, North America, people on holiday in Europe, quite grateful for it as well. And I guess that's just me playing my small part and trying to keep them in touch. As a Motherwell fan, talking to Motherwell fans, I don't dress it up as anything else. I'm not a professional broadcaster by any manner of means. I'm just a Motherwell fan, a bit like Peter, who's been lucky enough to work behind the scenes. And when we score, I'm a Motherwell fan. I just react like a Motherwell fan. Graham McGarry was saying that on Saturday. He enjoyed it. He obviously normally sitting in the press box as well and doing his job for the Evening Times and the Herald and can't normally celebrate. So you got a chance to celebrate on Saturday. Working alongside me. And you just celebrate a goal as a goal. And if somebody's chopped one of their players down, as you'll know, I react that way as well. So I'm truly a fan behind a microphone and just delighted that people get some degree of joy out of that enthusiasm that I bring.
And Peter, we did speak quite recently regarding your work, but it was good to hear earlier on that you continue to enjoy your role. And role seems to be enhanced now as well, because that didn't sound like Philip Speedy in the microphone on Saturday.
Well, as Graham will tell you, I spoke to him pitch side before the match, and I was had a wee chuckle when you said you were confident you're onto Saturday, because you did mention that to me, and I did temper that by saying in my previous two stints covering for Phil when he was on holiday last season, as stadium announcer, we drew 0-0 with Hamilton Accies, and the aforementioned Zach Jules horror mistake against Ross County when we lost 1-0, so I hadn't being in charge of the mic, if you like, when Motherwell had scored the goal. So, you know, when you heard the announcement of Bowman's goal on Saturday, that was absolute relief. Because I think if we'd failed to score again at the weekend, I would have been chased. So I was delighted to do that. But I'll gladly hand those stadium announcing reins back to Phil for the Aberdeen Betfred Cup game and beyond. I'll happily cover, but I'm more than happy doing the role in hospitality and trying my best to entertain the troops down there if I can.
I did enjoy Peter's choice of music at the end.
Glory
Days by Bruce Springsteen. I thought it might be a wee bit early for that, but can't fault you for trying, Peter.
Well, normally what happens is there's nothing pre-planned. We try and have a wee look and see how the game's going, and we just he just says, have a wee scroll down, and I say, Glory Days, there we go. We just after 22-0. So, well, three home games, three wins and a bounce. For Motherwell, that could probably be described as Glory Days. So I thought it's something nice and uplifting for people as they were walking out of Firth Park, heading for a wee pint or ten after another great win. So that was that.
Just a couple of bits of podcast admin. Firstly, apologies to anyone who had the misfortune to listen to our initial recording of this podcast, which we have had sound issues fairly... It's been a fairly rare occurrence, it must be said, but we had them, and we had them in style on Sunday night. The recording wasn't to the standard that we hoped, so we sit down again tonight to re-record, and hopefully this will be much better. It certainly sounds a lot better than it did on Sunday night from where I'm sitting anyway, so hopefully that is reflected in the recording. Also, the voting has now finished for the 25 greatest post-war Motherwell players. The list is complete. Myself and Jay and Buster, and hopefully nobody else actually know what that list is, and we're all working on it with a team of guys to get the book together. The launch night on the 10th of November. We've got very limited spaces at that as well. So, yeah, if you can and you want to get along, there'll be a number of ex-Motherwell players, Motherwell heroes along on the night. So get along, support the Well Society. You also get the pleasure of knowing that Les Hutchison is going to need to put his hand in his pocket and double that money that we put into the club. So yeah, the more the merrier. It doesn't look like, unfortunately though, we will have any space on the night. So the only way to get there is going onto the podcast website, mfcpodcast.co.uk, and booking your space there. And you'll get a nice fancy ticket in the post as well with the silly cartoon that we've got. Guys, thank you very much tonight. Graham, thank you for your efforts for the second time in three nights. It's much appreciated.
Pleasure.
Peter, thanks as always, mate. And as I say, we'll continue to do this over the course of the season and hopefully hear your familiar voice on numerous occasions then.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again, Graham.
You too, Peter. See you. I'll see you Thursday, probably next Thursday.
Yes, definitely.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday, hopefully discussing our fourth victory in a row. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.